You remind me of the Babe.
Babe.
Mm-hmm.
The song would have ended much quicker. Than you remind me of the Babe. What Babe?
Mm-hmm. Oh, fucking
just up. Some Babe.
Just the Babe.
All right.
All right, then. Episode 42.
Ooh,
10 weeks away.
My age.
Yeah, not for long.
But not for
actually,
long.
Actually, no, not when this goes out.
Not when this goes out. I'll be 43.
Here we go.
No, I did it lower because, like, normally you said I was doing it too high. So, all right, okay.
Oh, you listened to the opening up. Nice, nice. Okay. Should we try that again? Hello and welcome. It's going to be one of those episodes. Welcome to episode 42 of Darren and Matt's 80s Adventure.
Yeah, 42, Darren.
We're 10 weeks away from our first anniversary.
I know we are. My name is Matt.
And my name is Darren.
This week we are looking at the 1986 classic. Labyrinth.
Labyrinth.
Labyrinth. Yeah, a little bit of David Bowie this week, which I'm very excited about.
I'm really excited because...
Yes, you are.
Well,
I can tell.
It's apart from the fact that we've watched the film, we've also done something that we never do normally, mm-hmm. and we've listened to the soundtrack separately tonight. And it's been
on record.
On record.
Yes.
So I that was just lovely to just sort of take your time before starting and just
have
listen
a few
to
beers.
It. Yeah.
Really fulfilling the USP, getting a little bit drunk before we start.
Yes.
Fuck it. It's Christmas.
Right. Okay, good. There we've
gone
there. So before we get into it, would you like to hear some of the facts that I found out about 1986?
No, not really.
All right. Okay.
Go. Okay, then. Go on.
So, some facts about 1986. I don't know if I've done any of these before. There might be one that I think I've done before. Have I told you the catchphrase started in 1986?
Well, you're asking me?
Well, you're with me
every
week.
Then. No, I don't believe you have, Matthew.
Well, catchphrase started in 1986.
Did it?
You're right.
It's the Ready Money Rhyme.
Also, they had Liberty Weekend in America. So because the Statue of Liberty got restored.
Ooh.
And they reopened it in 1986.
Nice.
You've been there.
I have, yeah. We weren't allowed off it at the time, as it were.
Right.
Because of events from...
Was it cool to be there, though?
Yeah, it's an amazing place. And absolutely, I love New York. I've said this before on the podcast. But did you know, here's a little fact about the Statue of Liberty. Do you know how thick it is? Do you know how the actual...
It's bigger than a chair.
The actual outside is thinner than a penny.
Oh, the actual bronzing, is
yeah.
it? Yeah, well, didn't they transport it by a ship?
Yeah,
so you, yeah,
from France.
From France, so you hope it's a bit
from French
light,
France.
Right?
Yeah, I'd love it there.
I mean, it must still be heavy, I guess, but also high wind.
I
don't know if it's that thin.
Yeah. I guess it's pretty well anchored if it's been there 200 years.
What did you call me?
A cunt. What? That won't make it.
That was our first bleep. Okay. So you've worked up all around the country.
Mm-hmm. As have you, my friend.
Do you know the Metro Centre?
Not now. I've had a few beers.
All right. The Metro Centre. It's Europe's largest indoor shopping centre in Gateshead, and it opened in 1986.
Okay. No, I don't know that one. I've never been to Gateshead.
It's brilliant.
Is it?
Honestly, I walked around it. Bloody huge. I mean, bear in mind, a little lad from Plymouth, I looked around this giant shopping centre and I was like, it's got everything. It's bigger than Plymouth.
We've got a mall as well.
Yeah, like later. And it's such a Plymouth version of a mall.
It's a fucking mall, isn't it?
Right, Gary Lineker, he becomes the most expensive British footballer. All right, 2.75 million move. That's ridiculous, isn't it?
Was that to...
That's pounds as well, 2.75 million. And that was from to Barcelona from Everton.
Wow, £2.75 million for one man.
But do you know what?
A ball
that's
field.
Probably nothing nowadays for footballers, is it?
Crazy money,
crazy.
I tell you.
Crazy. And I thought I'd finish with...
We should get fucking royalties for plugging these bastards all the time.
Ice House. We love you, Ice House. And finally, the Sun newspaper alleges that comedian Freddie Starr ate a live hamster.
I remember.
I thought you might.
Freddie Starr ate my hamster. Ridiculous.
There we go. So those are some of my fun facts from 1986.
Nice.
Right, it's time for the charts.
Labyrinth was first released in the USA on the 27th of June 1986, and so this week we are looking at the UK top 10 for the week commencing the 22nd of June 1986. At number 10, falling four places from last week's number 6, it's Robert Palmer and Addicted to Love. It's another faller at number 9, down from last week's number 4, it's Simply Red and Holding Back the Years. At number 8, up from last week's number 11, it's Bucks Fizz and New Beginning, Mamba Sera. And at number 7, up 7 places from last week's 14, it's Owen Paul, My Favourite Waste of Time. Down one place from number 5 to this week's number 6, it's Aha and Hunting High and Low. Into the top 5, up 4 places from last week's 9, it's Amazulu and Too Good to Be Forgotten. This week's number 4 is last week's number 1, it's Doctor and the Medic, Spirit in the Sky. And up 9 places from last week's number 12, into the top 3, it's the House Martins and Happy Hour. At number 2, it's New Shoes and I Can't Wait. And it's a new number 1 this week, up from last week's number 2, it's Wham and The Edge of Heaven. And that was the UK Top 10 for the week commencing the 27th of June, 1986.
Some good songs there.
That is one hell of a top 10.
I'm going to time you out for a second, though. So as you're editing this,
yeah,
just check out the Doctor and the Medics one, because I'm pretty sure you said up from number 4 to number 1 is Doctor and the Medics or something.
I
think, I don't know. I wanted to give future Darren heads up on it.
Thank you. This week's number 4 is last week's number 1. It's Doctor and the Medics and Spirit in the Sky.
They were number 1 then?
Yeah, they've fallen from number 1. They were last week's number 1.
Oh, you said this week's number 4 is last week's number 1. Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry, Darren, who's editing this. It's
That's definitely going in the outtakes folder.
Yeah, interesting chart, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
What was the Bucks Fizz one?
New Beginning. It's the one where they sort of chant Mamba Sera a lot. No, not that one.
Yeah.
But they do chant that, yeah. Yeah, that's 10 great tunes right there. And Amazulu as well. Too Good to Be Forgotten. Now what more can I say?
Oh, my God, yeah.
I love that song. Just outside the number 10, we've got Papa Don't Preach, Madonna, Friends Will Be Friends, Queen, Venus, Bananarama, Sledgehammer, Peter Gabriel, Underground, David Bowie, Invisible Touch,
oh,
Genesis.
Oh, that's cool. So that was actually in the charts.
Yeah.
Let's
Go All the Way to Sly Fox. It's a great, great Lessons in Love, Level 42. The Chicken Song from Spit and Image. Everybody Wants to Run the World, Tears for Fears. What a great top 40. Everybody Wants to Run the World. They did it for charity.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. Yeah, so there we go.
Awesome. Yeah, some good songs out. And I love the fact that Bowie's in there with Underground.
Yeah, good old Bowie. We love a bit of Bobo.
Yeah. All right, so how about we move on to our next section, Darren, which is where you have, well,
a little challenge.
Those new to the challenge, Darren has a challenge to link last week's film to this week's film. So, and it starts with 5 steps, then 4 steps, then 3 steps, and 2 steps. We've changed a little bit this week. You've gone for a different way of doing it.
Yes, I've reverted to your way of doing it, rather than going as in like a step from an actor to a film is 1 step, and then to another film.
Yep.
Or to another.
I think it'll pay. That'll pay dividends down the
yes,
line.
I think you're probably right. Although it did mean that by going for 5 steps, I had to find 10 steps. To do it.
Yeah.
But that's fine. That's fine. Let's see if we did it, shall we?
Right. Okay. So just remind me again. So we had to, last week was Flash Gordon.
It was.
And you've got 5 steps to get from Flash Gordon to Labyrinth.
To Labyrinth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can it be done?
Let's find out. As we know, Richard O'Brien played Fico in Flash Gordon. And so that's where we're starting this week with Richard O'Brien. So step number 1. Richard O'Brien was in the Rocky Horror Picture Show with Tim Curry. Step number 2. Tim Curry was in It with Annette O'Toole. Step number 3, Annette O'Toole was in 48 Hours with Eddie Murphy. Step number 4, Eddie Murphy was in another 48 Hours with Bernie Casey. Step number 5, Bernie Casey was in The Man Who Fell to Earth with David Bowie, who obviously is in Labyrinth. And that's the 5-step challenge.
Nice. Well done, man.
That was hard.
I keep meaning to say to you, I do like the music that accompanies this.
That 80s game show start.
Oh,
yeah.
It really is.
That was a good finding. I like that.
I keep meaning to tell you that, and it's only just occurred to me. Yeah, well done, man. So now you've got 4 steps starting next week.
Yeah. I mean, I could have easily got to Frank Oz, I think, in about 1 step. Yeah. It was in Labyrinth. I had to go around the houses, 48 hours to another 48 hours. It's a bit of a fudge, a bit of a fudge.
That's all right. You did it. You did it.
Thank you very much. Right then, moving swiftly on. I say swiftly, we've been recording now for about 3 hours. But yeah. I would say the corona has kicked in, but in today's times, that's a different... We're drinking corona beer this week to start with, so that's what we said. Initial reactions then.
Oh, I loved it, man. Yeah. I really did. It was so nice to watch and listen to.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's probably going to be a lot of gushing this week from me.
I thought there would be. That's fair enough.
Yeah.
It's obviously a film that's very important to you, and that's good. It's good. The passion, I can see the passion in you about the film, and that's great.
Yeah. What about yourself, though?
It's a great film. I'm not going to pretend there aren't issues with it.
Okay.
Which we will go into later, but...
Where I was going, yeah, well,
no, play off the older paedophilia stuff and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah, there is that, yeah.
But no, seriously, on a serious note, it looks fantastic. The creatures are amazing.
Oh, my God.
Jim Henson was a genius. There's no denying that. And I loved it. I did love it.
Do you know, the last time I watched this was with you.
Yes.
We were drunk on a Zoom call and you were watching it on Sky Movies.
Yeah, or B-Scoby
Movies. B-Scoby
Movies.
I was watching it on YouTube because I bought it on YouTube.
Yeah.
And my version, yours was going ever so slightly quicker, wasn't it? So every now and again, you'd have to pause.
It's weird.
Yeah, a bit weird. So yeah, the last time I watched it was with you.
Yeah. Well, okay then. Well, that's initial reactions, I suppose. I think we know pretty much where we're going. Let's just head straight in then.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okie dokie. Regular listeners will know that at this point in the podcast, Matt has a challenge to give us the synopsis of the film. And he has as many seconds as the film has minutes. So, Mr. Matthew, how long was the film?
It was 1:41, Darren.
So you get 1:41 to give us the synopsis. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll take that as a yes. Let's have the jingle. And if you're still ready, go.
Sarah is acting out a part from her book in the park when she realises she's late home. She gets back and after a brief interaction with her stepmother and father... She's left to babysit her little brother, Toby. Toby's crying, and then she tells him a story about goblins, but it turns out to be true, and the Goblin King takes Toby, and Sarah vows to solve the labyrinth in order to save him. She first meets Hoggle, who's a bit brash, but shows her the entrance. A worm shows her that all is not what it seems, and a very tight costumed Jareth sings Magic Dance. Some might even find his outfit sexy. Time is marching on, however, and Sarah ends up trapped in an oubliette. Hoggle leads her out before bumping into Jareth, who casts doubt on whether Hoggle can be trusted. Next, she sees a creature being tortured. Hoggle runs and Sarah saves the creature that we find out is Ludo. They continue the quest but get separated. She runs into the fire gang who try to remove her head. Hoggle saves her but previously had been threatened by Jareth that if she ever kisses him, he would end up in the bog of eternal stench, and of course she kisses him. And they end up where she reunites with Ludo. They continue and meet Sir Didymus, who joins them on the quest. Sarah is hungry and Hoggle gives her a peach, which was another instruction from Jareth. She falls into a dream sequence and escapes only to wake in a junkyard. It's here that she ends up back in a room before she realises it's not real. Ludo, Sir Didymus and Sarah reach the Goblin City and escape with a security robot with help from Hoggle. There is a big battle in the city which they make through and Sarah goes off to face Jareth. There's a wonderful trippy staircase sequence before they face off and Sarah says he has no power over her. The world falls apart and she ends up in a room and father and stepmother arrive home. Was it a dream? She sees visions of the characters she met on the way. She tells them she needs them. They appear and party with Sarah as the owl form of Jareth flies away.
Okay. Sexy and time. You're passing that off as sexy time.
Look. When you're facing... Okay. When you're facing... Okay.
That's fine. We'll let the listeners decide whether that's allowed or not.
I thought I was being quite clever there.
Do make me laugh, I'll give you that. Right, so just remind us, how long was the film?
1:41, buddy.
1:41 you had. You did it in, drum roll, 1:45.17. I honestly thought you were going to be bang on 1:41. I was like, oh, damn it. So close.
Yeah, but, actually, I could have finished it a bit earlier, but...
Never mind.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Sexy actually, time.
Yeah, what is it again? So some might even find his outfit sexy. Time is marching on, however.
Yeah. Yes. Well, anyways, just joined us. Another little challenge that Matt has is to try and get sexy time into his synopsis every week.
I don't know how it started. It was just from episode one, I think. We just went sexy time. I mean, it just rolled on. But trying to get sexy time into the film Labyrinth is very challenging.
Yes. Okay. All right. So there we go. Mm. Sexy time. Unbelievable. Right, let's rip this film to pieces then.
Let's have
a look at this this classic from 86.
Mate, there was some stuff that I found out, and I was really surprised by this. Like, just the baby who played Toby.
Yes.
He grew up to be a puppeteer.
Yeah, well, he's actually the son of the guy who wrote the original story, basically, isn't he? Is it true, though? Was it one of those things that the sort of urban myth?
Mm.
The character was originally called something else.
Freddy.
It was, and because the baby was actually called Toby and wouldn't react to Freddy,
yeah,
they renamed the character. Oh, yeah. Okay. I didn't know if it was one of those.
No, but I'm guessing so, because I haven't just read that in one place. I've read it in so many different places.
Okay.
So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And another little fun fact, the owl was the first lifelike-ish CGI animal.
But for the time,
for 86, 35 years ago.
There's still something quite magical about it as well, even though it's obviously nothing like you get now. I like it.
I really like it. So, that's just a couple of little random things that I didn't know.
Yeah, so there we go. A coming-of-age fantasy.
Mm.
I don't think that's ever fully explored as much as it could be. But then I guess it's a family film, so maybe not really the place to explore it.
Well, that's it. You know, and for me, she wasn't a kid when I first watched this. Because I was probably, I don't know. I mean, I didn't watch in 86 when I'd have been 8. I was probably about 10 when I saw it. So she was older than me at the time. Yeah. So I was looking at like a semi-adult, like a cooler, older teen. Yeah, it's sort of a... But she's very childish in what she does, I suppose, isn't she?
Yeah, she's a brat, basically, at the start, isn't she?
Mm.
Yeah, she's difficult to like sometimes. At the start, I was like, oh, God, you're a bratty little cow.
Looking into it and obviously having to analyze it really fucking closely because, you know, you.
Huh?
So,
what are you trying to say? What, something might come up in the quiz or something?
Yeah, exactly. Wow. But there's lots in there that I didn't really realize because, like, for the longest time, I just assumed that, her mum had died years ago and her father remarried, but I don't think that's the case.
Okay.
So,
just the mum's not on the scene.
Well, it looks like the mother's run off with a guy.
Oh.
And the guy looks like David Bowie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, is that why the mum's in the David Bowie?
Yes.
Ah, right.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's sort of like an Oedipus type thing.
Well, I guess she's really upset with, also upset with her mother for doing this, but I guess she idolises her. Her mother was a performer, I guess, so.
And quite fancies her stepfather.
Well, yeah.
Sort of a, like, let's say, Oedipus-y type thing, but opposite with a
which
step.
Which is something I did not get until really looking at it closer today, because sometimes... You watch this as a kid or something, you put it on a few times when you're growing up, but it might just be on in the background. You're not paying that much attention to it. So, but I was laser focused on it today. It's a film that has a lot of layers.
Yeah, and it has a lot of influences as well. You know, obviously, I was just saying the Oedipus thing, then if that's what's come out of it. But there's all these fairy tales and legends things. There's this obviously Wizard of Oz, and Snow White and Cinderella, the stepmom, blah, 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 blah. And even Where the Wild Things Are, that's a massive influence on not so much the Labyrinth, but the creatures in the woods, basically.
Yep.
So there's lots of influences there.
Absolutely. I did read something about that.
Right.
I think Jim Henson put something in the credits. He acknowledges his debt to the works of Maurice Sendak.
One of my questions.
Was that actually?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, and obviously with the playing cards that are guarding the good and bad door, that's another nod to Alice in Wonderland as well.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's there's a lot of influences.
I spent so long trying to figure out that riddle when I was a kid. I was like, okay, but then what happened? Oh, yeah, it's cool.
It's explained very, very well in an episode of Doctor Who, so maybe watch that later.
Oh, it is, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, but it... Once she explained it this time, I really was laser focused. I've been a lot of laser focusing, and it was understandable.
Like you say, Sarah, she wants to be a performer as well. Obviously, in the park, rehearsing or just learning lines from a book.
Yeah, and that hit me today, and it strikes me that she is somebody with not a lot of friends.
Yes,
because you know what, 14-year-old is going to be in a sort of a theatrical costume in the middle of a park, you know, early evening, just before going home to babysit or something, and reading lines
with a wicked stepmother.
She treats me like that.
Did you recognise the dad? I know we're going to the cast later.
He was familiar, but I didn't Yeah.
Have you seen Only Fools and Horses?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Do you remember the episode? I think it's called Friday the 14th.
Mm.
And they go on a fishing trip down to Boyce's cottage in Cornwall, and there's like an escaped lunatic.
No. A little bit, yeah.
It's one with Granddad. So yes. So he's the escaped lunatic.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because I looked at him and went, of course it is. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And obviously he was in AvFab as well. So David Bowie. It's just, again, we'll look at cast later, but as a character, Jareth. I'm not sure he's, I think they could have dialed him up a little bit. A bit more, not so much panto villain. But
like
I think
more
he's very,
menace.
Yeah, maybe slightly more menace. There's a few bits that I think maybe could have just done with a little bit more. Getting towards the end of the quest.
Uh-huh.
Well, actually, I don't think the quest is enough. I think it needs a bit more jeopardy thrown in, especially as I don't think it climaxes the way it should. And I think he could be turned up, not so much boo hiss panto villain, but just a little bit
scarier,
yeah,
maybe.
I think so. But I think maybe the fact that he's working with puppets holds it back, especially in the Dance Magic Dance, which is an amazing track. It's quite stilted, I think, because he can't really do much because they're all so static.
Dancing
on the spot.
The documentary, they were saying that entire set, they were lucky it didn't fall down because it was full of holes.
Oh, really? Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. But I think he is fantastic. He's so watchable.
Yeah.
He looks amazing. Apart from the fact I do not want to look at his junk for fucking 1 hour, 41 minutes.
Oh, whatever, Darren.
I love Bowie, but not that much. They could have given him some better trousers.
I mean, they probably could have, to be fair.
Yeah.
It felt epic.
Yeah.
I think. Obviously, there's the use of matte paintings. Matt's paintings. But there are matte paintings and stuff. But it just visually.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And the creatures, the goblins and stuff. I think we said it before, probably in Santa Claus or whatever it was we did. They've all got a personality each.
Yeah.
They're brilliant. And you know, there's limitations with puppets, obviously. But Hoggle, his face
God.
Is so, it's full of expression.
Well, that's three people bringing Hoggle to life,
exactly.
Isn't it?
It's what, like 48 motors or something in his face or something. I don't know how many it was.
So you've got the actress inside it.
Yeah.
The person controlling the face, and then obviously Brian Henson doing the voice.
Yes.
But Hoggle is, oh my God. I mean, actually, that's a character we need to talk about because it is a proper character.
A character
though.
In himself, yeah, yeah. But as I say, with all of the goblins and things, they all have, I mean, the little worm as well when she first arrives.
Oh my God, yeah.
It's brilliant. And they're so likable, they're so funny. And it's a real credit to Jim Henson that he can instill basically a lump of plastic or whatever it is with a real character.
Well, that's the funny thing is I've always enjoyed the fact that everything, whatever appears on the surface, like the thing with the, you know, all the sharp objects.
The cleaners.
Yeah, the cleaners coming towards them. And then once it gets past, you just see it's a couple of goblins on a path. When you get into the monster at the robotic monster, is a guy in
it's
there.
Somebody work, yeah, yeah. And it's the same sort of thing they do in Muppets Christmas Carol, isn't it? It's each little thing is so clever.
The detail is just
it's brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
It's mind blowing. I think I appreciate it more as an adult. And then I watched the documentary and I was like, actually, so much work has gone into this.
Yeah.
And it didn't do well by all accounts.
It's a shame, isn't it? I think it cost $25 million.
And I think it made half of that back.
Yeah. Well, in the States, I think it's like $12.9 million in domestic cinema takings, which is a shame because it does deserve to do. I don't understand why it didn't, you know, with a name like Bowie in it as well.
I think it's probably done a lot more since then. Okay. You know, I mean, I think home
video don't think they've lost any money on it since.
No. One thing I particularly liked was the foreshadowing.
Yeah.
You go through Sarah's room and you see some of the influences, you know, some of the dolls look like some of the creatures she's going to meet and things like that. And you see, you know, I think there's a little labyrinth there or something.
Yes. All the books as well. As it pans across at the start, you see all the books basically that are influences on the story.
So
apart from the one he credits.
Things, or, yeah.
Froud? Not Toby. That's the boy, isn't it? Whatever his name was, Froud, who came up with the ideas. They just forgot to put his book in there. It's a real so, there we go.
But I like that foreshadowing aspect, you know, because you go back and watch the film and you see some of the characters that you're going to meet later on. You're like, oh, that's kind of cool.
There's a lot of thought gone into this movie.
And I think it went through a lot of rewrites and things like that, didn't it? And there's a lot of people involved with the writing process.
Yeah, even Terry Jones, who is credited as the sole writer, says, you know, the script or what is on screen only very vaguely resembles what he wrote originally.
I think he seemed so happy. He loved it. No, he seemed to really love it. But I think George Lucas had a bit of a hand in it as well. I know he sort of did some bits on it.
Luckily,
editing.
He didn't ruin it.
No.
But again, going down to Terry Jones, it's not a million miles away from things like Time Bandits, which I like as well.
I don't know. I've not seen it.
Really?
No, I have, but not since I was about 8.
Right. Time Bandits and Jabberwocky, they're all sort of that sort of weirdy 80s type thing. Thring?
Yep. Thing. Yep. Thring.
Thring. In spite of all that, there are still things that I find that don't quite work for me.
Okay, go ahead.
I think the story runs out of steam a little bit in the middle when we get to... it's about an hour in when she... basically, when they get to the Stinky Swamp. I think
the Fog of Eternal Stench.
That's the one. So in that respect, it sort of stalls a little bit. And I didn't like the mass ball thing. I thought it's just an excuse to have a music video for me. So there's a little bit of filler there.
I do see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I do get it.
It just holds up the story a little bit.
I love that bit of it, though, because I think it just looks magical seeing this whole mass ball. I do see what you're saying. Not cynically, even. An excuse to have a David Bowie music video.
Yeah.
But I love that whole sequence. I wouldn't have the film without it.
It's fair enough. But like I say, when they get to the Smelly Swamp, it just sort of stalls a little bit because up to that point, the story's rattling along.
Yeah.
And then they spend ages with Didymus.
Well, see, yeah, he's a highlight for me.
Really?
See, I, as a kid, I loved him. He was the funniest character.
Of course. And I guess marketing-wise, they probably made a lot of money out of Didymus. But for me, as an adult watching, it's like, oh, fucking, just get on with it. Just get on with it. For me, Ludo's my favourite character.
Oh, you got to love Ludo.
Well, it's quite nasty how they treat him, though. They're fucking torturing the poor bastard.
Mm.
So there's elements of this. So that stalled a little bit for me. And actually, I don't think Sarah actually does that much in terms of the quest. She doesn't really solve anything. She sits around and goes, oh, I don't know what to do. And people say, oh, we'll do that. I don't know what to do. Do that. It's the same with the worm. I can't get in. I can't get in. It's over there. And she goes through. And I'd like to see more...
So you think she's more reactive than proactive?
Yeah, 100%. I would have liked to see maybe a little bit more, I don't know, Crystal Maze. A few challenges for her to solve rather than just stand around.
You have 3 minutes.
Yeah, maybe. So, I just think it needed a little bit more jeopardy.
She solved the puzzle.
Eventually, yeah. But I don't know. That's it, really. That's it. I just think a little bit,
so a few minor changes.
Yeah, exactly. Get her to do more, like I say, be more proactive. Maybe move that stuff along in the swamp a bit quicker. And the big battle at the end, I think, went on a bit too long. It seems to be quite repetitive. Just
I think that might have been a bit of indulgence, but I think I don't mind that because it showed off all these wonderful puppets, even to the point where you got a turret that fires a bullet that says "ow." You know, it's got a little goblin inside the bullet.
Exactly, and that's the whole point. It's a family movie, and it's a lot of fun.
This is it, and I think a friend of ours, his daughter, watched it in the last couple of years and just loved it.
Right,
fell in love with it.
And she's 47, isn't she?
Yeah, she's 47. No, but also the fact is that it is 35 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we did say this earlier, but it apart from a little bit, it can't be helped with the fire gang. You know, the green screen stuff there.
Yeah,
I think
really
most of it holds up incredibly well for being a 35-year-old film.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, actually, it's the fire gang that's where it sort of grinds to a halt a bit for me.
Yeah, the fire gang doesn't need to be there.
No, and like you said, the effects aren't brilliant. Yeah, it's fun, but that's it really. And I just wanted a bit more of a crescendo up to the end. The whole Escher thing, though, at the end,
oh my god,
is phenomenal, and it looks amazing when he just sort of walks around from being below to above. It works, so
and
well.
There's so much. I mean, obviously, there's smoke and mirrors there, but the practical elements of that are
it's multiple split screens, isn't it?
Mm.
It works so well today, still.
Yes, that's one of my favourite bits, actually.
Yeah, and all based on a painting by M.C. Escher. And I'm not sure if he was like an MC, like MC Hammer.
MC Hammer.
Yeah, big
all
pants.
Based on a painting by MC Hammer.
Good touches.
So your favourite bits, Daz? I mean, obviously that's one of them.
I pretty much everything with Ludo, because he's just awesome. Although at first I thought he's a little bit creepy.
Yeah.
But no, I love Ludo. He's a great character. He looks phenomenal. And again, he's as a puppet, he's excellent. Really, really good. Really likable. Yeah, the Escher stuff at the end is great. Yeah, so those are real highlights for me.
Yeah.
Yourself?
Oh, the Bog of Eternal Stench, because that's where I feel we really get to slow down and appreciate the story.
Yeah. Nice, nice.
Do you know, I mean, there's loads. The bit at the beginning when you're first meeting the Goblin King and all the goblins are in the bedroom.
Oh, that's quite scary.
Yeah, I was going to say, as a kid, that petrified me. I was like, what the fuck? Imagine, you know, it's bits on the panel of your bed moving up and there's goblins underneath. You're like, oh my God.
Oh, that's another thing as well. I think for me, that's what works best because it's when things are in, you know, that you can instantly identify with.
Yeah.
That's when they become quite scary. And that works so well because they are horrible, but they're funny as well.
Yes. It's throwing a snake. Snake. And I was like,
and the effects still stand up really well.
They completely do.
And Bowie with the balls.
Oh, the balls. I mean, that is amazing. Have you seen any sort of documentary on how that's done?
Yes. Yeah. I obviously did some YouTube research. I downloaded I downloaded the 30th anniversary edition. Unfortunately, it won't play on my TV because of the different codec or something.
Right.
So I didn't get a chance to watch all of the extras that are on the...
That's so clever, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that poor fucker stood behind Bowie.
Yeah, for anyone who doesn't know, it's that old trick of putting your arms through somebody else's arms and being their arms.
Mm.
And so he, this guy who is a juggler type thing? I guess. He's an expert, world-renowned juggler, or was. I don't know if he still is. But he was doing absolutely blind, just putting his arms through Bowie's arms.
He's like twisted as well.
Yeah. And twisting and, you know, revolving three balls in his hat, as it were.
That looks magical. Now they were just, I suppose, CGI it. Yeah. But again, practical.
Well, maybe, you know, if Bowie put in a bit more effort.
Yeah, he could have learnt it, eh? Yeah.
Jeez, he was only in it and wrote music for it. Fucking hell, lazy.
I would love to learn that. Like with the crystals.
That's it looks so mad.
I mean, for those who can't see, because it's not a particularly visual.
This podcast isn't visual.
But we're kind of moving our hands back and forth. Like
like this.
Like this, yeah.
And for those watching in black and white, the pink ball is behind the blue. Nice.
Well, yeah. I mean, I could sit and just talk about what I love all day. But
yeah.
I mean, as I say, the beginning's brilliant. All the songs I love, and I just love it as a story. And I think we know.
I have to say though,
yeah,
I do find it a little bit morally and sexually suspect.
Right.
With looking back now from 2021, I find it quite not distasteful, but a little bit. It makes me go, When you basically got a 14-year-old girl being, and there is a sexual frisson between her and the Goblin King, and he says,
"Of course." And what they say,
"I want you for mine or whatever, and I'll be your slave." Blah 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 blah.
They sort of play that down when they're together, but when she's telling the story at the beginning, the King of Goblins had fallen in love with the girl,
who's 14 years old. But so then, I find that quite a little bit.
Yes, but then I suppose you take a film like Twilight, where you've got like a young girl in there. It's about a girl that falls in love with a vampire. The vampires are hundreds of years old. I think Jareth is meant to be a few hundred years old, like an immortal being.
Is she 14 then in Twilight? Or
She's in school, so I don't know how old she is. Maybe about 16. But yeah, it's...
I guess maybe it's just those fucking trousers as well that doesn't help.
I think because they didn't sexualize it, that we kind of go, oh, phew. But he does turn around and say, like, he doesn't say, like, be my wife or anything. Does he kind of says, let me rule you and stuff like
and
that.
And I'll be your slave.
It's
a little bit close to the knuckle for me. And I didn't like, I thought it was quite.
But also, if it's her fantasy as well, she's the leading lady in her own film.
Yes, exactly. Maybe it is all a dream. Who knows?
Well, it's definitely not based on real events. Like.
You know what I mean, you dick. I mean, again, it goes back to that coming of age fantasy thing, doesn't it? But I also didn't like the fact that they kidnap a baby. I think that's a bit weird.
Oh, I don't know. That to me sort of goes back to some really old-fashioned fairy tales and stuff. I mean,
it's the witch, isn't it?
It's the whole Rumpelstiltskin as well. I want your firstborn child and whatever else. Yeah. And the whole fact that he steals the baby to turn it into a goblin. I like that. I think that's a great MacGuffin, if you like. And, you know, he's not going to go
MacGuffin?
Through... Yeah.
Okay,
but she's not going to go through the labyrinth to pick up, I don't know, her doll.
Yeah, I just found it a little bit weird. It didn't sit that easily with, but they're very small things to point.
I don't know. I just can't stop smiling. But
that's good. That's good. Well, on that note, let's have a little break and we'll come back to Wildcast.
Yeah, we will.
This month's special Patreon episode is available now.
Top 5 songs of
1986. They're in spandex. They're big fucking guitar. Oh, superb. It's the final countdown. Living in America, James Brown.
Which sort of, you were singing that when we were coming to America.
Living in America.
My number five is this. Ooh. What do you think, man? Yes, Cutting Crew and I Just Died in Your Arms Tonight.
Thank God for that, because on my list I was really flogging myself for not putting that in the list.
It's a good song, though, isn't it?
That Burning Heart.
Again, from a Rocky film.
Yes, exactly. And what a tune. Another Manic Monday.
Not from a Rocky
film. Not from a Rocky film. But yeah,
imagine he loses. Just another Manic Monday.
Whoa. Written by Prince.
John Farnham, You're the Voice.
Thank God for that. I can cross that one off my list as well for not putting it in.
Oh,
I think she's phenomenal. I love her voice. I love her style. I love her attitude. It's Alison Moyet and Is This Love? Is this love? I love it. Fucking love it. He's a very good slap bass player. Ringing any bells?
No.
No? Mark King?
No.
Okay, my number three tune is Lessons in Love from Level 42.
Okay. Yeah. If you've enjoyed it, well, I don't care if you've enjoyed this or not.
All 80s Adventure Patreon special episodes are available via subscription from the website patreon.com/80sadventure or check out 80sadventure.co.uk for further details. And we're back!
Part two of Darren and Matt's 80s Adventures look at Labyrinth.
Yeah!
And if this is your first time to the podcast, this is the section where we look at the cast. So, a bit of alternate casting for you then.
Oh, nice, yes.
So what do you want to start with, Jareth or Sarah?
Let's go for the man himself, the big man.
All right, so alternate casting, there's a few that have been chucked out there. Mm-hmm. So, most famously, Michael Jackson, because they were looking at a pop star, rock star, whatever else to play Jareth. Prince...
Okay.
Mick Jagger.
Yeah, Jagger I can see. Yeah.
Sting.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And apparently before they settled on the idea of casting somebody rock or pop or whatever else, they considered, I don't know some of these people, Simon McCorkindale.
Okay. Oh, he was in a big American soap, wasn't he? And Casualty.
And Jaws, apparently 3D.
we don't talk about that.
Did we not?
Okay, that's an interesting one.
Yeah. So there's Simon McCorkindale. There was Michael Gothard.
Okay, no, don't know him.
No. And Kevin Klein.
Yeah, he's sort of got that sort of slightly otherworldliness about him.
Is there
anyone
you would have cast from the 80s? From the 80s? I mean, John Parr?
Yeah, obviously. Always, I mean, always.
Just keep your normal hair, John, and come on in.
Oh, yeah. We'll give you some funky eyebrows.
Yep.
No, I can't see anyone else in the role apart from Bowie, I have to be honest.
Okay. So for Sarah.
Yeah.
Apparently a plethora of actresses auditioned. So Helena Bonham Carter.
Helen Carter.
Yeah. Jane Krakowski. Yasmin Bleeth, Sarah Jessica Parker.
Sarah Broderick.
Yes, Mary Stuart Matterson. I mean, I don't know, because they all seem a bit... Because she was only a few years later in The Abyss, wasn't she? Laura Dern.
Right.
Kerry Green, Maddie Corman, Lily Taylor. There's loads. Ali Sheedy.
Right.
Maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
She's got that kind of loner vibe in the 80s films all the time.
Yeah.
Mia Sara, Marissa Tomei.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So apparently Sheedy, Corman were really heavily considered, but Jennifer Connelly who did it.
Yeah. I don't think she's always successful, but she's very young.
Yeah. Well, let's start with her, shall we?
Yeah, okay.
And she was 14 at the time.
Yeah.
I don't know if she's meant to be 14 or whether she's meant to be a little bit older, because she looks older than 14.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I thought she was... you know, mid to late teens or whatever else.
Yeah.
But, well, I'm assuming she's still at high school. You know, her stepmom wants to go out on dates and things like that.
Yeah.
I think her performance got panned a little bit, which I think is quite harsh on her 14-year-old. I know, but...
Yeah, I mean, if she's 14 years old, then you've got to cut her some slack.
Yeah.
And she does a great job.
She does a great job.
Like I say, she's not always successful, but at 14 years old.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, she's still working now as well.
Yeah,
she's
exactly.
She's a cracking actress.
She's an Oscar winner, isn't she?
Yeah, I think so. Beautiful Mind, maybe, off the top of my head.
Yeah.
She's in Snowpiercer at the moment, which I'm watching and really enjoying.
Snowpiercer. Oh, right.
Although Snowpiercer does sound like a good rip-off.
Yeah, yeah.
but yeah, I think the character does have an arc. She does evolve. She makes friends. She seems like someone that's very alone at the beginning of the film, and she has these, albeit imaginary, friends at the end.
Yeah, I think she does a fine job, but given her age and everything, I think it's a bit unfair to be overly critical, I think.
Can you imagine being at 14 years old, not just filming, because a lot of it was filmed, well, the studio stuff was filmed here.
Yeah.
So you grow up in America, you end up in London for God knows how long, working with David Bowie.
Exactly, and dancing with David Bowie.
And again, like you said with Bowie, a lot of the time she's working with puppets.
Exactly.
She gets very little human interaction.
Yeah.
On to the man then. Oh, I love him.
I'm sure I've enthused about Bowie before on these podcasts, but you know, back in 2016 when we lost him, it was a real blow, a real sucker punch.
It really was.
Was a genius for someone who kept reinventing himself, his style, his genre. I mean, this is the perfect era for him to be in this, because at this point he was the Thin White Duke. You know, the Ziggy Stardust had gone and all the other stuff. He was the Thin White Duke, and he is fantastic.
He is. And a confession, this is my first ever experience of David Bowie.
Going back?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
So I didn't know, you know, didn't know who it was from Adam. So then when I heard his stuff later on, I was like, oh, yeah, the guy from Labyrinth.
Yes.
That's a weird way to go about it, isn't it?
It is, but then given your age, it's a way in, isn't it?
I mean, songs like, I know this is about this film, but songs like Life on Mars.
Yes.
Starman.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's just hit after hit, and not just hit, just works of amazing musicianship.
Yeah. Whenever I listen to Bowie songs, some of the songs from this soundtrack sneak their way in there because it's just great. I mean, you hear him belting out Underground.
Yeah. But also, he's acting. I think he did train as an actor, or did he work with lots of actors? I don't really remember fully. I think he had this sort of Piero thing before he was a singer, and maybe did like sort of alternative theatre type stuff.
Oh, right.
So he did have a vague acting background.
And so, but the only thing, so as you say, the only thing you criticise on his performance is you wanted to amp it up a little bit more towards the end.
Yeah, maybe a bit archer, a bit more scary at times.
Okay.
But
I mean, because the goblins are clearly petrified of him, aren't they?
But maybe that could well be down to the director. We don't know. We weren't there, so
maybe he had pushed it, and then he was like, "Actually, no, it's a kids' film. Bring it back a little bit." Yeah,
yeah. For me personally, I would just like a little bit more. Boo, you bastard!
Right. Okay.
But not too much.
Right. Do you want to look at everything that makes up Hoggle?
Hoggle. Yes. First time we meet him, he's having a piss.
Yes.
Dirty little bastard. He's a funny character, isn't he?
Yeah, I love Hoggle.
Yeah, but he's sort of that, can you trust him, do you not trust him?
He's so out for himself.
Oh,
he's completely out for himself. But I think they did a cracking job with this. Was it Shari Weiser?
Yeah.
She did the physicality, and the physicality of Hoggle is just fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, and one of the things I did see, that they spent weeks with her in costume and the animatronic head, all sort of getting everything together, and somebody else reading in the lines. And once they committed it to film, it works so well.
You forget it's a puppet.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
It's not a puppet. It's a weird hybrid, isn't
it? Yeah, it's a Jim Henson creation.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. And without sounding stupid, there's no joins there. It's a complete character. The head and the body work together so well.
I love CGI and things. I miss the cleanness of... I like the cleanness of today's films, but I do miss some of the practical stuff of days gone by.
I totally agree. I agree. Like I said in the first part, the characters are so there. They're evident. They're readily... They're watchable. It's as simple as that. And they're great. And, you know, we lost a real genius when we lost Jim Henson.
Yes.
Just so clever. So clever.
On the performance of Hoggle, though, Brian Henson does a great job.
Yeah.
Really great.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't fault that at all.
So apparently, a lot of, you know, Hoggle does a lot of this, like, oh, and oh. Yeah. Apparently, a lot of that was so that they could have the mouth open so she could see where she's going.
Oh. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice, nice.
Let's talk about one of your faves then.
Ludo.
Ludo.
Love Ludo. Such a big, lumbering, not imbecile, but sort of simpleton-ish. Mm.
There's something about that archetype, really, isn't there? Yeah. The gentle giant, if you like.
It's a character we've seen time and time and time again.
Yeah, like Harry and the Hendersons and stuff like that.
Exactly. You know, it's huge. Fucking huge.
I was watching it. It was next to Sarah when he stood there. I was like, how are they controlling this thing?
Well, wasn't the original costume like over 100 pounds and they had to trim
something
it down
like that,
to
70
odd pounds, something like that? That's still fucking heavy.
Yes.
But I love him. He's great. And just, he's so likeable as well.
And the rocks are his friends.
And the rocks are his friends. Yeah. Okay.
it is kind of weird because we always kind of chat about mostly the leads. I mean, we do sometimes talk about some supporting characters, but you got obviously the really human ones. Mm. So Sarah and Gareth, but now we are literally talking about puppet performances.
We're talking about things that don't exist.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in this film especially, there's no point talking about the baby.
No,
a baby.
Yeah, yeah. Toby, you did a great job, buddy.
Absolutely. I think you have one ugly fucking baby, I'll give you that.
Whoa! Oh, I thought Toby was cute.
No, yeah.
Oh, whatever. Didymus?
Didymus I found quite annoying, but I guess he's there for the kids.
He really is.
Yeah.
I found him really funny and really clever when I was a kid. You know, that whole bravery, like, he stood there and he's being really
bluff,
brave.
The bravado.
And but that was really funny when he's being really brave, like, I will give you the chance to surrender, whatever else. And and then when something else happens and they all run away, he's like, yes, yes, I've done it. And he's a
proper Muppet puppet as well, though, isn't he?
Yes.
He would not be out of place in the Muppet Show.
It's when he goes nuts on somebody and starts hitting them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is that.
She actually says hi, yeah, at one point.
Miss Piggy.
No, I think it's Sarah says hi, yeah, doesn't she? I think when she's hitting someone.
Oh, does she? Yeah. Oh, that's Sarah? A nice little nod. And obviously, Frank Oz is in there.
Yep, always. You're not going to go wrong with Frank Oz.
Do you know what? I've always clocked his name, but it was only research. I was like, actually, what the fuck did Frank Oz do in it? And he was the guy with the hat.
He wasn't really a voice actor in this, was he? He was in it.
Mm. So that's bizarre.
Yeah. But yeah, he's a very dependable. We saw him in Blues Brothers, which was one of our early episodes.
At the very beginning.
Yeah,
at the beginning of Blues Brothers,
and he's also in...
handing back the condom, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's in the prison, isn't he?
Yeah,
yeah, and he's also in American Werewolf in London, which hopefully we will do at some point in the future.
Well, it'd be rude not to, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
I mean, apart from that, we do have the incident. We got the stepmother, the father, but there's, you know.
They're in it for maybe five lines each.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, fine job.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. No, I wouldn't mind it. I wouldn't mind five lines. Please give me some fucking
I think
work.
The real talent here is everything that goes into making these magical creations come to life, because they really do.
Yeah.
They exist.
Yeah. Again, at risk of repeating myself, they are real characters that you want to watch. They're funny. They're believable. It's just incredibly clever.
All right. Well, I think we should call it time there on the cast, and then move on to the... Well, we'll have a break, obviously, get more beer.
Okay.
And then come back and talk about the music.
Okay, then.
What's going on? Are you all right, Daz?
I'm so cold.
Why are you so cold?
I've lost my favourite Def Leppard t-shirt. Oh, if only I knew somewhere else to buy another t-shirt.
Do you know what, Darren? It's funny you should say that, because we now have 80s Adventure t-shirts.
What?
Yeah. All you got to do is head over to 80sadventure.com, click shop and see what we have on offer. It's a way of supporting the show, and there's also some fun designs with a lovely 80s feel.
80s Adventure t-shirts. Oh, I'm going to go to the shop right now. Bye.
Darren, it's an online shop.
And we're back!
Part 3 of Darren and Matt's 80s Adventure, where we're looking at Labyrinth, and in this section we will be looking at the music and then onto the impossible quiz. So
take a breath. Yes, here we are then. Music. Two composers for this one.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
What are their names?
Well, one was Mr. David Bowie. Yes, yes. Who was responsible for five of the cracking tunes within the film.
Cracking tunes. Now, were you ever one of those that went, is it Bowie or Bowie? Because that used to be a whole thing of discussion, didn't it?
Yeah, I don't think I'd spent too much time on it.
All right, okay, let's move on.
I think it's Bowie because of a Bowie knife. I don't know for definite.
I think he called himself Bowie.
Yeah, well, then that's okay then.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
What about yourself? Did you say Bowie or Bowie?
I think I never knew what to say, but yeah, I think I did go with Bowie.
Cool.
All right then.
Excellent. So he wrote the five songs. And I don't think they're all fantastic.
What's your favourite? What's your least favourite?
Magic Dance.
Isn't it great?
It's just superb. It's one of those, it's a funky, funky tune. And even though it's really static sort of in the film, and he literally just has to sort of shuffle around behind the puppets, it's a great song. It's an amazing song.
See, I know you say it's static, but they are, I mean, everything is happening. It's so busy, isn't it?
But because it's all sort of framed.
Yeah.
He's very limited at where he can go, what he can do.
It's those little touches in that song where you've got like the guy getting the drink or the goblin getting the drink and underneath is the other goblin drinking.
That's it. I mean, that's the Jim Henson thing, is it? It's always so cleverly put together and there's always little things to look out for. And such sometimes really adult nods that the kids just sort of passes them by. And I love that. That's great.
But Magic Dance is, fantastic.
That's my favourite. My least favourite, it's probably the song in the
I know what you're going to say.
The Masked Ball.
That song.
Okay, but just saying.
It's just, it feels magical and...
Right. It feels really out of place.
Oh, right, okay.
And I get, she's eaten the thing and she's passed out and her memory, blah, 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 blah. She's out there. She's tripping, man.
I'm going to make you an album, right? It's going to have that song on it.
Yeah.
It's also going to have Charades from Grease 2.
Why would you do that?
You just don't like your dream sequences, Darren. That's what I'm getting.
I like them when they're appropriate.
You don't like your dream sequences.
Whatever. What's the song called?
Behind my charade.
Stop.
As the World Falls Down?
As the World Falls Down, yeah. That's a Stimson title if I've ever heard one.
Yes.
Only a few people will get the reference.
The Escher sequence.
Yes.
I mean, that's a...
That's a stunning, stunning sequence.
Everything I've done for you.
I mean, that sequence, as we said earlier, it holds up really, really well today. It's a weird, strange number.
Mm.
It's typical Bowie, and I love it. It's really good.
Because it's not a song as such, is it?
No,
he sings a bit of it and then there's instrumental and...
It's Within You, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's quite haunting.
Yeah. But I mean, Can't Live Within You, some of the lyrics. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Underground is a great way to bookend the film as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Again, another one that doesn't quite work for me is Chilly Down.
If I'm going to be a little bit critical, that is the one sequence that doesn't need to really be there.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
As we said, the effects don't hold up now.
It's kind of nice to know that it's Cat from Red Dwarf. He's one of the...
Yeah, that's another one of my questions gone.
Everyone knows it was Cat.
Exactly.
You can hear it though, can't you? Yes. That's the thing. If you know Red Dwarf at all, you can hear Cat from Red Dwarf as one of the Fieries.
Yes. Bowie composed five tracks for the film and they're very sort of 80s Bowie. Not all 100%. Successful for me personally, but it's still Bowie. It's still Head and Shoulders above something else.
So we've got Underground, As the World Falls Down, Within You, Chilly Down, and
Magic Dance.
That's it.
So he proposed, composed the songs, and composing the actual score was Trevor Jones.
Okay,
who was a South African composer. Pretty much 100 films to his name.
So he's been busy.
Very, very busy. Worked a lot with Jim Henson. He was responsible for Dark Crystal.
Watched that in a long time.
For a long time. Labyrinth, as I say. He also was responsible for things like Mississippi Burning, Arachnophobia, Last of the Mohicans. So he's worked a hell of brass off. A big, big composer. Also responsible for Notting Hill.
I love that.
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
I'm going to go out there. I bloody love Notting Hill.
I know you do. So, two.
I love that little brush off. Yes, we know you do. Let's move on.
Yes, yes. I still don't think I've ever watched it all the way through.
Oh.
Yeah, but it's not my style of film.
It's not.
I accept Love Actually because it's Christmas. So Trevor Jones, responsible for lots and lots and lots of good films.
Yeah.
And I think his stuff in this is nice. In places it's sentimental, it's quite orchestral, but then on the flip side, it's very sort of twangy 80s.
Yeah.
Exploration movie type
bam,
thing.
Bam, bam,
exactly,
bam,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's very much a product of its time. And he encapsulates the whole era of the 80s synth thing and orchestral. And it's a good score.
Well, interestingly, when we were watching, listening to this, there was Top Gear on quiet on the telly, and they were showing a car.
Yeah.
And some of his score sounded
a
like...
A new Ferrari. If you want to sponsor us, please fucking send me a Ferrari.
It was a lovely Ferrari.
Yeah, very lovely Ferrari.
And there was his score going on above it, and it did look like a car advert, didn't it?
Yeah. The start of a new TV series.
Yeah.
Nice.
No, I'm just looking. Yeah, he has done an awful lot. And obviously, we do record this a few weeks in advance. He was born on March the 23rd, so happy birthday for in a couple of days. But actually, when you hear this, it will be a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah, so, as we're recording, as Matt says, it's pretty much the end of March, just before Matt's birthday.
Whoop, whoop. Well, listen, I'll have been 43 for ages by the time this goes out. So,
yeah.
Speaking of when this goes out, ladies and gentlemen, this was chosen this week by our Patreons.
Yes.
Now, it was pretty much a 50-50 split, so we had to flip a coin.
We had to toss for it.
It was between this and Never Ending Story.
Never Ending Story, yeah.
Are you happy with doing this? Let us know, people. Do you love Labyrinth? Do you love Never Ending Story? We will get to Never Ending Story.
Of course. And do you want to influence what we listen to in future? Because once a month, this is. We put it over to our Patreon subscribers. We give them two alternatives, two choices.
Yep.
They choose which film we watch. And as Matt said, this time it was a tie. It was a 50-50 split. Everyone wanted this one or everyone wanted that one.
So we just flipped a coin.
We flipped the coin and we went with this. So yeah, please come along and subscribe.
Yeah, why not? You get exclusive content.
Exclusive?
You do get exclusive content. You get like extra episode, but also you get the episode early. And there's lots of plus. You get to message us and we message back.
Yeah, and we get to drink on what you give us.
All right then.
So your contribution really helps the production. Well, there we go. That's the music.
That is the music.
We know where we're going.
We do.
Eyes down for a full house. Okay, as it stands, we reset last week. We're episode 42, and
for those who've just joined us.
We reset every 10 episodes. And just to remind us, Matt, how have we done so far in the first lot of four lots of 10?
Well, you have taken the crown on each one of them.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah, I forgot that. Sorry. So anyway, episode 42.
I've got my supporters there, Dad. So they keep messaging me saying one day you'll take him.
Yeah, one day.
I won't but be not, fucking out. Not today.
I don't know. You know this film inside out. I don't.
I don't
know. Oh, maybe I should have done the quote this week then.
Don't say I know it inside out.
Okay. Well, I fucking hope not. Anyway, so yes, we reset a couple of episodes ago. Matt is now in this block of 10. He's in the lead, 1-0.
That means nothing. Last time I was like 4-2 at one point.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah. But I battled back. You can hear all those. They're still available on your regular podcast apps. So anyway, without any further ado, let's crack on with this week's quiz. I don't know.
What was that?
It's your fault. You bring over a crate of Corona beer because you think it's going to be funny. I'm now pissed.
It's not funny. It was on offer.
Oh, so, okay then. Without any further ado. Anywho, being an even-numbered episode, it means I have to ask a question first. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
I ask question number one first. So
without any further ado.
Question number uno for you, O.
Yeah.
When Jareth is talking about Toby, he says he has what attribute?
His eyes.
Correct.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a really weird feeling, actually knowing the answer to something.
See, I don't think I'm... Anyway, yes, 1-0 to you.
I think I've been a bit harsh in that case.
Brilliant.
All right, question number one for you, Darren. How many fairies had Hoggle sprayed before meeting Sarah?
Ooh. Shite. I'm going to go with 50... Because I know how many he finished on. He finished on 60. So how many did he... I'm going to say he sprayed 54.
Wrong, I'm afraid.
55?
He had sprayed 56.
Oh, before, ball bags. Okay. Before he,
because his first one was 57, then 58,
59, 60.
I knew you were going to clock that. I thought anything involving that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I went the opposite way. One of my questions was, how many fairies did he finish on?
That's definitely another podcast.
Oh, for goodness sake. Oh, we've all been there. Panto first night party.
But bear in mind how we meet him as well. Oh. What's he holding in his hand when we first meet him? How many fairies did he finish on?
Oh,
right.
For God's sake.
Oh, my God.
I'm laughing. I've got to put my bins on now. I'm laughing too much. Give us a second. Got a headache now. I've laughed so much. How many hidden images of Jareth are there in the labyrinth?
Right, it's not one of my questions. It's going to have to be a guess from stuff I've read. I can think of a couple.
Right.
But I think, I'm probably going to be one number out or something. I think it's seven.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
It's seven. Fucking hell, this could be our first whitewash. 3-0 to Mr. Matthew. Fuck.
Wow. Okay.
At least let me get one, please.
Yeah. Okay, I need to look at some of my questions then. What was Sarah's mother's stage name?
I have absolutely no idea.
Her name, Sarah's mother's name.
Oh, no, that's a stepmother's name, isn't it?
I'm actually hoping you get this. Cause...
Is this the one that there's like two alternatives? Or is that a stepmother's name?
I don't know.
Okay. I don't know. Karen.
It's Linda Williams.
Oh, okay.
And it's something I thought you might clock.
No, didn't only clock because... that.
When it's panning across, that's when it's got the photos of her mum and Bowie,
yes.
Like we talked about earlier.
I didn't look that much into it. I should have
done. Oh, and it said Linda Williams, blah, blah, blah. There's a poster in her room as well that says Linda Williams. So there's a few references.
Right.
I'd always thought her mother was dead.
Oh, okay then.
Okay.
That's 4-0 to you. Fucking hell. This is my final question for you then.
All right.
Because it's...
Be as hard as you like, yeah.
Yeah. I've got to try and get at least one. In Sarah's room, there are several theatrical posters.
Yes.
There are at least three musicals and one play. Which play?
Noises Off.
Oh, you bastard! Yeah, Noises Off. You shithead. Okay, 5-0. Fucking hell, this is a whitewash. See, I said, didn't I?
Oh, come on, Des. I love it. Like, in 42 episodes, this has probably been the most I've
You
come...
can't see his grin now. Honestly, he's got such a fucking wide grin on his face.
Oh, it's not just that. It's the semi that I've got as well. My final question for you. I mean,
yeah. Oof.
Some of them are pretty harsh, actually, Darren. All right. What time is it?
Yeah.
When she realizes she's late to go home and babysit.
7 o'clock.
Okay.
Okay. I got one. Thank fuck for that. What? Are we going to carry on?
Do you want to?
Nope.
Some of your other questions?
Yeah. Well, we do have other questions, but just to say, that's it. You've won this week, obviously, 5-1. Congratulations.
Thanks, mate. I'm really happy about that.
Yeah, I know. I to be honest, I thought you would.
But that, it was looking at the, and all credit to you, making me look at Labyrinth in this way, because I didn't realise the level of detail, the stuff that's in the room. So then when I did look at the poster, I was like, oh, Noises Off.
Yeah.
And Cats and Evita.
Cats, Evita's there, yeah.
So it was, it was really cool to see all these little influences, and it gave me a different perspective on the character.
Nice.
So
nice.
All right, go on then. So what are some of your other questions?
Well, I was actually going to ask which future Red Dwarf star voices the Fireys?
Danny John Jules.
Hang on, I've got to put my bins on again. I've been laughing too much.
I've been laughing too much as well.
How often do the
pet... How many fairies did he finish?
How often do the parents go out? Parents/step-parents go out?
Every weekend.
Yeah, which children's author is credited for his influence?
Yes.
Time at the start. How many fairies did Hogwarts spray?
60.
Time at the end?
The end of the entire
film, yeah.
In real life or in fantasy land?
In real life.
Guessing midnight?
Midnight, yeah. What's the Far East's only rule?
You can't take someone else's head.
Yeah. Oh, damn it, I should have asked this one. How many times is the name Jareth actually said in the film?
Oh, well, that's difficult, but I don't know.
Five.
Is it all by Hoggle? Well, I think Jareth scares me. Stuff like that, yeah.
Oh, fucking no. And what's the Sarah's father's name?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, damn it, just the wrong questions again. Robert. Yeah, what's the stepmother's name? And there are two options for this. Well, it's either Karen or Irene.
Where's that said?
It's not, but she's credited somewhere as Karen, but in the novelization, she's Irene.
Because on IMDb, she's credited as stepmother.
What's the dog's name? Sarah's dog is
Merlin, isn't it?
Merlin, yes.
Because also, there's a reference to Merlin Ambrosius or something is from a book, isn't it?
Yeah. What's the actual line that makes the goblins come and take the brother away?
I wish the goblins would come and take you away right now.
Yeah.
When Darren disappears, I'm like, oh, shit.
What does Hoggle say Sarah's problem is?
Something like you think of things too literally or things aren't always what they seem, something like that.
Takes everything for granted.
Yeah. Well, that's a piece of cake, isn't it?
Which door knocker speaks first?
The right, I think. He mumbles.
Which one is it? Either mouth or ears?
Oh, mouth.
No, it's the one with the ears blocked.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. Who appears in the mirror first at the end?
Hoggle.
Ludo.
Oh.
Damn it. I asked all the wrong questions again. What does the worm offer Sarah?
Cup of tea.
Cup of tea.
All right. Mine sound a lot worse than yours.
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
They really do. I feel like a bastard. Okay. How many swans are in the first shot of the film?
Fuck off. Three. I don't know.
Two. What was the name of the Disney book in a room that we pan across? Because you talked about these, so you might get that.
Disney book?
Yeah, there's an annual.
Oh, I don't know.
Walt Disney Snow White annual.
Okay.
It's on that set of books.
Well, that's
a
bit naughty,
about.
Really, isn't it? Because that's the same as saying Disney's A Christmas Carol.
Yes, yeah, I suppose so.
Fuckers.
How many goblins pop out and laugh when Sarah drops the snake?
Four.
Close, five. And you've got me so paranoid on this podcast, Darren, right?
That's good.
I sat and counted the eyes that follow her.
Nice. Oh, my God.
Yes. Roughly 36.
Okay.
And in Magic Dance,
yes,
there's a bit of a mistake, actually, I've noticed on this. So how long before Toby will be Jareth in Magic Dance?
9 hours.
And?
40 minutes.
23 minutes.
23. Oh, yes, I do remember.
Although, looking at the clock.
Right.
So the clock actually says that it's 28 minutes to 4.
Right.
Because of the 13 on there as well. So you're like, hang on a second. It would be 9 hours. And it says 9 hours 23. Actually, it shows a shot of the clock where it says 9 hours 28. So, anyway.
Well, there we go. That's 5-1. I can't believe that. 2-0 to you in this group of 10.
Oh, my God.
That's good. So we're going to have to up the game next week, Daz. Come on, man. Here we go, then.
Or you can let me win.
Fuck off. Let's have last orders.
Last orders at the bar, please. Last orders at the bar.
Well, there we go. That's our look at Labyrinth.
Yeah, it's all right, wasn't it?
It's all right, yeah. Final thoughts, I suppose, then.
Yeah, do you want to go first or do you want me to go
I'll
first?
Yeah, I'll go first. Whichever.
You go first.
It's a film that is, I don't think it's worn fantastically well, but I don't think it's dated as much as some of the others that we've seen. I think there are a few problems with the script and the pacing. I think it runs out of steam a little bit in the middle, as I've said. But I love the characters. I love the creatures. They're just a work of genius.
Aren't they just? Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's a lot of fun. It's so much fun. And you can't fail but love this film. It's of an era where things were just so experimental and fluid and blah, 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 blah,
blah. And nothing was impossible.
And nothing was impossible. And I loved it. I enjoyed it. That's high praise. Yes, it takes a little dip in the middle, but lots of films do.
Thing is, though, man, I love you to bits. I mean, you're one of my closest friends, and I find you to be harsher on films than perhaps I would. But for you to give this sort of level of praise to Labyrinth.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to be unnecessarily
harsh.
No,
I don't think you're being unnecessarily harsh.
I just
try
to be objectionate.
You do
rather than objectionable.
Yeah. You do. You try to look at things, and sometimes I think I fall into the trope of I look at stuff through rose-tinted glasses quite a lot. And so for you to lavish that sort of praise on it actually means a lot. And that wasn't me kind of going, you're harsh on everything. No, it's me kind of saying, that's good that you like it.
I try and be, you know, as I say, I try and spot the bad stuff as well.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying there's much bad stuff in this. I just think there's a few little things that haven't worked so well. So I'm going to give it out of 10.
How many fairies are you going to get?
How many fairies do you finish on? I can't believe that line.
I can't believe you said that. I love it.
I am going to give it... I'm going to give it a strong 7.5.
Awesome.
Yourself?
I think... I was probably about 8 to 10 when I started watching this film. And I have gone back to it and back to it and back to it. Probably more so than the vast majority of the films we've done. As a fantasy film... it's one of my favourites, and the soundtrack is just, it's magical. Bowie is captivating. The puppetry is just sublime. And it's even, again, watching the documentary last night of the behind-the-scenes stuff. I mean, how they did all that stuff is just, it's mind-blowing. It's a true, true mastercraft. And I feel great talking about this film because it is so well put together. To listen to the soundtrack today on vinyl, or record, as we like to call it.
Yep.
It was great. It just sounds so good. And I know I'm a fanboy over it, and I know I'm probably going to go much more inflated than I potentially should, because part of me saying it should be a 9.
Okay.
But it's not.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to go the full hog on this.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
10.
Yeah, I thought you might.
I acknowledge there are problems, but I will watch this film, and I'll watch it again before the year's out. It's one of the reasons I bought it on YouTube, so I can just watch it over and over again. But
absolutely.
You know, the more I watch it, the more I fall in love with it. That's the thing.
I feel a bit nauseous, to be honest.
Right. On that note, then.
Yeah. Well, there we go. That's 16.5 out of 20.
Yeah.
That's good.
17.5 out of 20.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, you didn't go 9.
I went the whole hog.
You fanboyed all over it, yeah.
Yes, I did. Over the face.
Stop saying that.
All right, folks. Listen, what is your opinion? Did you like Labyrinth? Do you still like Labyrinth? Is it a film that you'll go back and watch? Is it a film you won't watch again?
And just get in touch anyway. It's great to hear from you. Actually, we need to get some of those emails that we've had and read a few out over the coming weeks.
And also, do you want to know what's coming next week, Darren?
Well, I would love to know because I have no idea. That's a lie.
All right, the tagline for next week's film is, some fight for money, some fight for glory, he's fighting for his son's love.
Oh my word, that sounds very dramatic.
It does sound very dramatic, doesn't it?
Yeah. Ooh, I wonder what that could be.
I've never seen this film, so I'm quite excited. Ooh. So if you know what that is, then, you know, that's cool. But if you don't, and you don't want to Google it, then you can look at our Facebook page on Wednesday when the trailer will drop.
Fucking hell. Or the trailer might be released.
Yeah, the trailer will be released.
Yeah, don't forget to like the Facebook page. And if you're on Twitter, then come along and join us as well.
Share us with all your friends.
Absolutely. And get in touch. It's great to hear from you. And thank you for listening. You are absolute stars. Don't forget, you can you can influence this podcast.
Yes.
Fucking hate that word, influence.
It's true, though, isn't it?
But in the actual sense now, you can influence what we listen to in future. If you join Patreon, you get to choose what we listen to.
That's the way. There's three ways you can support the show. You can join us on Patreon, which has monthly benefits. Second way, just you can give us a review.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Exactly.
That'd be nice.
And then the third way is just tell people about us. So we really appreciate it.
Yeah. And love the 80s. Obviously, that's why you're here.
Well, until anything else, Darren?
Nope.
Until next time, I've been Matt.
And I am Darren.
Cheers.
Cheersy.
I'm unsure as to some of whether these I've done before.
Well, it's easy for you to say.
Right, and let's go again.